Okay, shalom. We made it. Jeff Sachs here, Web Yeshiva. Masechet Ta'anit, live from Mishkan Tzipora. I'm wondering where everyone else is. Do we think that they're late? Because I said I might be a few minutes late.
I don't think Ben is back yet.
Oh. He's on like one of those Amish vacations where he doesn't have access to the internet.
Something like that.
Okay. So I'll start. Last week we started the third parak. We're here towards the top of Daf Yud Tet Amud Bet. The Mishnah had said, Yardu Litzmachim Aval Lo Le'ilan. The Mishnah had talked about three different types of rains. The type of rain that's needed for fruit that grows on trees. That's a deeper rain. That's a heavier rain because the water has to go down to the roots. There's the type of rain that's needed for tzmachim, for vegetables, your tomatoes, your cucumbers, your lettuce, your whatnot. That's a much lighter rain because the rain doesn't have to go very deep. As a matter of fact, the opposite rain is always potentially damaging to the other. In other words, if you get a very, very heavy rain, it can damage vegetation. And then there's a third category of rain.
Yeah, I can't hear you.
Well, here I am. We hear you. There's a third category of rain that fills up the reservoirs, the caves and the wells and the cisterns, which is, of course, needed for people to have drinking water as the rainy months subside and the long, dry summer comes about. So that's what the Gemara here is talking about. That's the section that the Gemara here is talking about. So the Gemara says, hold on. The Gemara says, Bishlama litzmachim velo le'ilan. This all makes sense. This is all fine when the rain comes enough for the vegetables, but not for the, but not for the, for the, for the trees that we would call and cry out immediately. We would start the process of tshuva immediately. Mashkachatla, it's common. This is common that de'atia nicha velo atia razia. It's common that the rain comes gentle, but it doesn't come chazak. It doesn't come strong. So it's coming enough for the vegetables, but not enough for the orchards. Le'ilan velo letzmachim de'atia razia velo atia nicha. But in the opposite case, when it comes very strong for the trees and not for the rain, this also happens. Laze v'laze, when both the vegetable rain and the tree rain comes, avalo laborot v'leshichin v'lema'arot, but it doesn't come for the reservoirs. Mashkachatla de'atia raza v'nicha. Mihu tuva lo atya. Right, that the rain can come both heavy and light, but it doesn't come tuva. It doesn't come in sufficient quantities to fill up the reservoirs. Ela ha detanya yordu leborot v'leshichin v'le'ma'arot. But what would be that case? What would be a case that it rains enough to fill up all of the reservoirs, the cisterns and the wells and the water reserves, but it wasn't enough for the tomatoes? It wasn't enough for the tangerines? In other words, the lightest rain is for the vegetables. The heavier rain is for the trees. The heaviest rain is for filling up the water reserves to last the whole summer. So how could it be? What's that case where you get enough rain for the cisterns, but the vegetables weren't watered along with that heavy rain for the heavy rain for the for the for the reservoirs. What's the situation that would happen? So the Gemara says, "De atya b'shvichuta," that it came in one straight, solid, soaking downpour. Right? There was one very severe rain. That severe rain filled up all the reservoirs. But even if you get a lot of rain in one shot, that's not necessarily good for the plants or for the trees. What you need is the water to penetrate in an ongoing way down to the roots, either the shallow roots for the vegetables or the deep roots for the trees. When we moved into our home here in Efrat, you know, the Efrat's kind of built on the sides of hills, and it's just plain rocky hills that get carved out. So our building was kind of like carved out from the side of a mountain. On one side, on the eastern side of our house, we have no windows, because it backs in straight into the mountainside. And only on the eastern side of our house, looking out over the beautiful valley, do we have windows. There are a couple of windows on the side, but mostly our windows are all facing east, because the back of our house backs straight into the mountain. So we have a garden. Many of you have been to our very lovely garden. But basically, all they did was they took this sloping side of the mountain, they chopped it out, they carved it off at a 90-degree angle to build a house on it, and they put some topsoil on top of this rocky, mountainous area, which is not terribly deep. So we wanted to plant trees. So the gardeners came and they explained to us which trees were likely to do better and which trees there was no chance that they were going to survive. And we planted a tree that was meant to be a carob tree, you know, like the Chonia. We're going to come to the Chonia Magil story in this perek. And the gardener told us, don't water it. It needs a lot of water. So don't water it a lot. Don't soak it. Because if you soak it, what happens is that the water gets absorbed on the top layer of the soil, and the roots, instead of going deep, will instead of going down and creating some kind of getting a hold on whatever soil and rock was there, if you pour a bucket of water on it every day, the water will get absorbed on the surface centimeters and the roots will stay high. And then the tree won't have an achizah.
A grip.
It won't have a good grip down, and the tree won't be solid. They said it's better take the garden hose and put the garden hose next to the tree and open up the faucet just a trickle, and drops, meaning this was drip irrigation, right? We made our own drip irrigation. And every night for a few minutes, we did the drip irrigation. Every night the water would go down and it would penetrate in one spot, and it would go down and down and down and down. And then the roots would follow to absorb the water, and then the tree would have a good grip on the land. But it didn't work, because after a couple of years, the tree had grown so tall and the roots were so shallow because of the rock underneath it that in a big winter storm, the whole tree toppled over. So I mentioned this. Why? Because one big heavy rain, enough rain to fill up all the cisterns for the whole summer, is not necessarily good for the trees or the plants. Not only is it not good for the trees and the plants, it can be very damaging for them. Right, one heavy rain can wipe out all of the vegetation. Right, it gets drowned. Plants can get too much water. So that would be the case where you have enough water for the reserves of drinking water, but not enough water for the trees or for the vegetation. So now the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan.
I think that it's also an important factor is at what point in the season the various rains come down.
Right.
Not only the amounts, but you can plant your tomatoes and there's no water, and then 4 months later water comes down. It's not going to help the tomatoes.
Right.
Well.
Right. A lot of it has to do with the timing, and the crops that are native to to Eretz Yisrael are crops that are in tune with the natural weather patterns. We grow all types of things artificially, and we bring water, or we do hydroponics, we do other things that don't necessarily reflect the actual natural order. Now the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, it introduces this breita. Matrien al ha'ilanot bifros ha'pesach. We're matria. We call out. Remember, we discussed, even though it sounds like we blow the shofar, it's probably a synonym for we start to cry out. We begin the tshuva process for lack of rain. If there's not enough rain for the trees, bifros ha'pesach. Bifros ha'pesach probably means close to Pesach, as Pesach is about to arrive. The Rishonim, of course, want to specify, is this Erev Chag? Is this Rosh Chodesh Nisan? But let's say it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. If enough rain hasn't come for the trees by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so then you start crying out. Al haborot vehashichin vehama'arot bifros hachag. And if there isn't enough rain in the reserves to have drinking water, so you start the tshuva process at the beginning of the chag. Now, what's the chag? What's chag stam in halachic literature? Yes, Yehudi?
Two questions. One, if we don't have enough rain for the trees by Pesach or by Rosh Chodesh Nisan, how much of a chance is it that rain is going to fall after Rosh Chodesh Nisan? I mean, aren't you crying out for something that's against the natural
water? So we're going to come back to that in a moment. But what does it mean when it says if there's not enough drinking water in the reservoirs by Chag, then you start the tshuva process for that? What's Chag?
Shammai says that Shavuot, despite the usual.
Okay, but what is that's you're not answering my question. My question is, what does the word Chag usually mean?
Right. So I'm saying usually means Sukkot.
Sukkot.
But Shammai here.
Yehudi, I'm muting you. I just wanted the answer to one question. Right? I don't want the Yerushalmi. I just want to know what the word chag means. Okay. Now I'm unmuting you.
I said Sukkot.
Sukkot. Sukkot. So what does it mean? This is an obvious question. What does it mean if there's not enough drinking water by Sukkot? Sukkot begins the rainy season. So if there hasn't been rain through the whole summer, probably people are already dying of thirst. Probably people are dying of thirst. Ve'im ein lehem mayim l'shtot, matrin aleihem miyad. So it doesn't mean that they're dying of thirst. It means there's a shortage of water. If people really don't have enough water to drink, so then you start the tshuva process at whatever point you've crossed that red line. Like we used to have the red line in the Kinneret, right? So whatever point that is in the cistern, there's a mark that they said if the cistern isn't filled up by enough. So, but the obvious question is, if the warning light goes off for a lack of water on Erev Sukkot, if Chag means Sukkot, which is, by the way, that's what the Rambam holds, it's what Rashi holds. How could it be that's when the alarm bell rings? Right? All summer long, they didn't have enough water. They knew that they were going to be short on water. All summer long, they didn't start davening. So this is the question that the Ritva asks. Look, here's the Ritva. The Ritva says, Val haborot shichinu ma'arot b'fros hachag. Perusha Rambam zal, v'gam Rashi zal, u'mifarshim acherim, dahainu sukot. V'ze tema gadol. This is perplexing. Shaharei tzorech shalahem b'imot hachama. They need the rain in the wells during the summer, because it doesn't rain during the summer. V'heich lo hitrin alehen k'shayut srichin lehem v'yatriu alehem achshav sheboim hagshamim v'yitmalu. So why are they going to start davening for the rain at Sukkot when anyway, right after Sukkot it starts raining? I mean, it happens not this year. I mean, I think we're supposed to start getting rain tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Tomorrow, Thursday, Shabbos, it's supposed to start raining. But normally by now we would have had rain. So he says, well, I understand. All summer long there's not enough water. All summer long they're on Shpilkis that the water's gonna run out. It's not that the water has already run out, because the Brisa said if the water has already run out, so then you start miyad. But they're aware that they're in the minus. They're aware that they don't have enough, that there's not enough budget.
The rain in the summer would be damaging. I mean, that's the whole thing with Shmuel and Avi. So, like, you know, you can't take a chance on that. So then by Sukkot, you definitely need it again. And then at that point, you pick it up.
David, you read ahead in the Ritva here. V'halo ein raya l'gzeira min ha-shamayim b'kshamim. Ela k'shelo yordu b'mot ha-gshamim. De'ilu b'mot ha-chama siman klalahim. If it were to rain, even though they need the rain, were it to rain in the summer, that's a bad omen, right? And it could be damaging to the future crops, which is why the Yerushalmi, see, guys, you don't understand. Yehudi sent me some of his biography last week or the week before. So now I understand how he knows everything. It's not just that he prepares for the shear, which is a good thing to do. Right, but Yehudi is a very well learned and educated man, so it's not surprising that he knows this Yerushalmi. Right, he seems to know everything, and we're glad to have him with us. But not when he steals the card that was up my sleeve. Uvi Yerushalmi amru befeirush befros ha'atzeret. Right, he says no. It's true. The word chag usually does mean Sukkot. Sukkot is the chag par excellence. But not always. Shavuot, which is called Atzeret, is also called Chag. So the Yerushalmi learns the Braisa completely differently. The Yerushalmi says if it hasn't rained, if there's not enough rain in the cisterns by Shavuot, by the beginning of the summer season, or towards the beginning of the summer season, that's when you sound the alarm, right? That makes a little, the Yerushalmi makes a little more sense. V'ze ole yafeh, v'ashkechan b'masechet Rosh Hashanah, and he brings something from Rosh Hashanah, the Tanya v'achlu v'ladai l'shlamim b'chag, u'fei v'sheh ravashi, d'haynu atzeret. He brings an example from Gemara Rosh Hashanah, where Shavuot is called chag. You see, it's not unprecedented, right? So the Yerushalmi, the Ritva brings the Yerushalmi to say it makes a lot of sense. Right, it makes more sense to say that we're talking about Shavuos and not Sukkos. But wait a second, the Ritva now has to answer for the Rambam and Rashi, who say that it means Sukkos. Ulefi shitat meforshim zal yesh lidchok velomar ki bevadai hatzorech shelahem haya yoter gadol bimot hachama en achinami. All during the summer, when there wasn't enough rain in the reservoir, they had a big problem. They were b'gahach tzoros. They didn't have enough rain, and they get a little nervous, right? It's like, you know, like, remember, I keep using this idea of the metaphor of the rain being like your balance in your bank, right? Because rain wasn't, I mean, rain, of course, is obviously necessary, because if you don't drink, you're dead pretty quick. But rain is also necessary for all the crops, and the crops are, of course, the indicator of your well-being and your parnassah. And then spiritually, the whole thing is interpreted as a sign of whether or not God is happy or unhappy with us. So he says, Enochina, the Ritva has to explain how the Rambam and Rashi could have said this was talking about no rain in the reservoirs until Sukkot. So he says, Enochinami. During the whole summer, they were balachats. They were nervous. They were stressed about the low levels of water. And their real need for water was then, not now. If you've made it to Sukkot already, you're in the home stretch. Hang on another week or two. It'll start raining. You'll be all right. Avalafisha eno zman gshamim. But since the summer months are not the rainy season, lo hitriu alav, she'ein matrien al ma'asen nisim. U'keshehegia zman gshamim hitchilu lahatria. They don't quote, it's similar to what you said, David, but there's a different, the Ritva comes to it from a different angle. David, if I understood you correctly, says they didn't daven for rain in the summer because rain in the summer is bad for the crops, right? Then all the wheat will get spoiled, and they'll, instead of dying of thirst, they'll die of hunger. That's not what the Ritva says, although it might be included in his meaning. The Ritva says they don't pray for rain in Tammuz, in Av, because it would go against the natural order. You never get a heavy rain. I mean, somebody can Google this to find out what was the most heavy rain, heavy summertime rain in the history of the country. Maybe now and then at the end of a chamsin, you get like a sprinkle, right? Which doesn't count for anything. It's evaporated practically before it hits the ground. Right? But if it were to rain, Kemoshe Tzarich, enough rain to fill up the reservoirs in the middle of Tammuz or Av, in the middle of July and August, that would be Ma'aseh Nisim. And you don't matria for Ma'aseh Nisim. Right? You can ask Hashem to help us according to the natural order. But you don't ask Hashem to help us in a non-natural order, which is the definition of nisim, of the miraculous, because it would change the natural order. I mean, you know, you could say, Hashem, send a lot of rain in July, which is unusual, and also make sure that all the raindrops that fall in July all go directly into the well, and none of them should land on the field of wheat and ruin it. Right? I mean, I guess if that were to happen, it would save the day and avoid the problems. But you don't do that. We don't daven for nisim in that way. But once the fall comes, once Sukkot comes, so then for it to rain at that point is not in contravention of the natural order. Let me just finish this Ritva here, Yudi. It says, Ve'im ein lehem mayim l'shtot, but if in the middle of the summer they don't have any water to drink. It's not just a shortage, right? The Bryce is talking about a case of a shortage, right? But if it's really a case of there is nothing to drink and people are going to literally die of thirst, then miyad matri'im aleihem. Perish b'chol zman v'afilu me'atzeret ve'elach, o mechagas sukot ve'elach, kol zman sheyachsor lehem she'ein lehem l'shtot mayim klal u'pashutu, v'chein perish Rambam zal. And that's what the Rambam says in Hilchot Ta'aniyot, that if it's really a case of there's nothing to drink at all, so then you do start the tshuva process. Yes, Yehudi.
I have 2 points, one substantive and one methodological.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't respond to what David said about Yatsa Nisan V'yadu B'shamim Siman Kalalahi. In other words, it's not really after Shavuos, it's actually as soon as Rosh Chodesh year starts, that rain is a siman kolala. So that's first. This, my second issue is methodological. Now that Steinsaltz has fixed up the Masara Tashas to the point where we can pretty well figure out where most things that we used to call brito come from.
Mm-hmm.
I think the word brito should only be used if we have no source.
Uh-oh.
If we know what the source is, we should say the Tosefta says, like it does here, or the Mechilta says, like it does here, or the Sifri says, or the Sifra says, and the word Brita should be reserved only for when the Gemara quotes a Tanaitic source that we have absolutely no idea where it comes from.
Okay. So what does Steinsaltz say the source for this is?
Tosefta, that's what I was just quoting before. Tosefta, Perek Bet, Tosefta, Ted, he says that it's Cretan. and Tet, depending on how you number it. By the way, Lieberman also gives you, in other words, if something like this comes up, then you can always look at Tosef Tavshuta Lieberman and see what he says. One of the things we have to realize is Yerushalmi is at least as much influenced by the Tosefta as it is by the Mishnah. That's very much not like the Bavli. Okay, so that's a, in other words, if the Tosefta seems to seem strange, how do you think I got to Yerushalmi? It's not like I do it all the time. I don't want to take credit for something that I do all the time, that I only do when something is indicated. In other words, the reason I went to Yerushalmi is because the Tosefta didn't make any sense. So I decided to look at the Yerushalmi to see if the Yerushalmi could make some sense out of it. In other words, that's all a methodological point. The substantive point is how we answer the issue of Yatsa Nisan, the Yardu Gishamim Siman Kalalahi.
Okay, I hear you. And would that I had the time to research all of the Toseftas that are quoted in the Gemara. But that's why you're here. You know what, Yehudi? I'll split my salary with you, since you're like the teaching assistant. But I got news for you. Half of nothing is nothing. Tanu Rabbanan. Ve'ezu miyad shalahem. So when it says, when the Gemara says, when the Tosefta says that you. In the absence of rain, so much so that people have nothing to drink, you matrin miyad. What's the definition of miyad? Miyad normally means immediately. Miyad normally means immediately. Ve'ezu miyad. Ve'ezu miyad shalahen. When they say miyad, what does it mean? Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. It doesn't mean that, like, you listen to the weather report on the news. And there's, you know, like we have the Kava Adom in the Kinneret. There's the Kava Adom, there's the Kava Adom Elyon, the Kava Adom Tachton. I never understood what that meant, right? And it's like, you know, like you're running a race, right? So like there's a finish line. We don't say there's a finish line, the first finish line, the second finish line. It's either above or below. But we have the Kava Adom Elyon, which means it's bad, but it's not really bad. And then there's the Kava Adom Tachton, when it goes down X number of more centimeters below it, below the line in terms of how much water is in the Kinneret. So it's not that you listen to the radio in the times of Chazal. It's not like you listen to the radio every night, listen to the weather, and they say, you know, Miflasa Kinneret, the water level in the Kinneret is at X centimeters, and you know, oh, that's the magic number. So miyad, everybody go tear sackcloth and ashes and goes outside. No, it means when the Betin establishes that we've reached that point, right? So then it starts the process of sheni chamishi sheni, of fasting on the next Monday and the next Thursday and the next Monday. Va'al kulan ein matri'in aleihem ela, but if rechaya shalahem, and these fasts for not enough water are regional. Right? It's not national. If Rechaya is obviously a Greek word that means like an Azor, a region. Right? So if, God forbid, in Gush Etzion, we were probably like this section. It's not even like a whole Shevet. You can imagine that, like Shevet Yehuda is quite large. Right now, most of us are sitting in Shevet Yehuda. Everyone is sitting in Shevet Yehuda except for you, Yehudi. Bracha, you're also in Yerushalayim, right? Oh, she doesn't have her microphone on. Bracha, I think, is in Yerushalayim. I don't know where. But presumably she's also in the parts of Yerushalayim that's Yehuda. But Yehuda's a pretty big place. Only Yehudi is Michutz LeYehuda. How could that be? So, but in Yehuda, you can imagine that we get enough rain up here in Gush Etzion. But down in, let's say, like near, what do you call it? Like down below, Maybe they didn't get enough rain. You know, like in past Gvaot and over there, right? Or further down south, like near Carmel and near Hebron, right? You can imagine that we got enough rain and they didn't. It's a big area, and we're at a very high elevation relative to other places, and maybe things are different, or vice versa. So we wouldn't say that if there's not enough. You don't say there's a shortage of water nationwide, right? The weather in the Galil is a lot different than the weather in Yehuda, right? The weather in the Shvela is a lot different than in both other places. So if there's a localized drought, that in that place you start the matri'in, you start the tshuva process. Then the Gemara talks about askira. Askira, according to most opinions, is what we call diphtheria. Diphtheria is a disease that we do not encounter, thankfully, in our experience in the Western world. It has almost been completely eradicated. It's still present in sub-Saharan Africa and India. Still, for some reason, suffer from outbreaks of diphtheria, although it's very well treated. Very well prevented, I should say, by vaccines. Remember, you should take vaccines. They work. Diphtheria is the kind of thing which is very easily treated, very easily prevented by vaccines, but very hard to treat if you actually contract it, particularly among children. It's particularly deadly among children, which is why all of our children and all of us were vaccinated for diphtheria. It's one of that, it's, what do they call that? The Mishulash, right? So you get one vaccine for three things, for measles and diphtheria.
Measles and whooping cough.
Whooping cough, right? So, and it works pretty well. But if children, if in the adult population, diphtheria, it's like a disease that affects the respiratory system. Through your lymph, like your lymph nodes, like if you see pictures of diphtheria patients, it looks like they've got this huge thing hanging under their neck because their lymph nodes all swell up and their breathing pipes get all choked up, and basically you choke to death. And antibiotics are only partially effective. So that it has about a 10% fatality rate amongst people who are affected. And amongst children under 5, it has a mortality rate of up to 20%, which is an extremely deadly disease. COVID, which has killed over 5 million people worldwide, that's a lot of people, 5 million people worldwide in the last, whatever it is, year and a half, has a much lower mortality rate than 10 or certainly 20%. So this diphtheria, in other words, modern scholarship identifies this plague of askara as diphtheria, because elsewhere in Chazal there are descriptions, and not just in Chazal, but in literature of the ancient Near East, the word askara is obviously not a Hebrew word. It's probably cognate to other languages also. I don't know whether that's Greek or Latin. I'm not sure what the etymology of askara is. Somebody can tell us. But in other ancient texts, the descriptions of this disease all more or less match up with diphtheria. That's how it's identified today as being diphtheria. So if there is an outbreak of diphtheria, bizman sheyesh bamita, if it's a deadly outbreak, meaning there are lighter outbreaks and there are heavier outbreaks, just like, you know, we have different variants of the coronavirus, some of which are seem to be a little more strong, some a little less strong. So if there's an outbreak of diphtheria, which seems to be a deadly outbreak, matri in alel. So then you start the tshuva process, you sound the alarm. Bizman she'en bamita, but if it's a lighter outbreak of diphtheria, people are getting sick, but they're not dying it. Ein matri in alel. So you don't necessarily start the whole tshuva and fasting process. Umatrien al hagovai b'chol shehu. But on locusts, govai is a kind of locust, a kind of chagav. On locusts, for any amount of locust, you start the tshuva process. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer afala chagav, a different type of locust. Right now, so we all know about locusts. They're a terrible thing. It happens from time to time that we get. It happened. Didn't it happen less? You know, this whole corona, everything is a mishmash. The first summer of corona, summer 2020, that was the first summer of corona. Wasn't there an outbreak of locusts? Wasn't there a swarm of locusts that came up from Egypt? And I remember everybody thinking, "What? That's not like it's the last thing we need, right? Like, well, we don't have enough going on now. Every plague in the book we're getting. So locusts. Here's the BBC. It's like amazing to watch.
Triggered by the rains, an all-devouring
army. Got a picture of it.
Locusts. Emerge from eggs buried in the sand, gathering into columns which may stretch for 10 kilometers. At this stage, they can't fly, only hop, but it doesn't hinder their progress. These sweeping hordes devastate any fresh growth in their path. After 5 weeks of steady munching, the infantry becomes airborne. These breeding swarms can cover up to 80 kilometers a day, but only while the food and moisture last. So how do you define a desert in Africa? There are places where less than 50 centimeters of rain falls a year.
So you understand why the appearance of even one locust is enough to set off the tshuva, tefillah, fasting alarm bells, right? I'm sorry, I meant to scan it before, but since I came home late, I wasn't able to do it. But in the Dat Mikra, on Sefer Yoel, which describes the plague of locusts that affected Eretz Yisrael in his day, the Perush of the Dat Mikra brings a quote from the memoirs of Aleph Mem Luntz, who was a late 19th century, early 20th century geographer and Choker Eretz Yisrael. Who lived in Yerushalayim, and off of Ben Yehuda, you know, those side streets of Ben Yehuda, there's a street called Rehov Luntz. You know, it's where the, Cafe Rimon is off of Ben Yehuda, where Big Apple Pizza used to be, right? That's that little quarter is Rehov Luntz, named after this Aleph Mem Luntz. So he records a story of a plague of locusts at the end of the 19th century in Eretz Yisrael, where I think I'm getting the date right, maybe it was later, but I think it was during the Ottoman period, where the government made a decree that every able-bodied person from, 10 years to 50 years old, every day during this plague had to go out and collect that. The problem was that the locusts come, they eat up all the food, but they also lay their eggs. And then the eggs hatch, and that was what we saw at the beginning of the clip, these little hopping critters before they can fly. And those, that second wave of the hopping critters, of the babies, those are the ones that really do the damage. But while the eggs are all the size of the head of a pin. You had to go out with a pail. It doesn't specify how big the pail was, but let's say the pail was, I don't know, a pint, even if it's just a pint, maybe it's a quart, and you had to fill the pale, every single able-bodied man, woman, and child had to go out and every day fill a quota of a pail full of these locust eggs, and you brought them to the town square wherever you were, to the iria, and then they were like thrown into these bonfires or these vats of kerosene or whatever they did in order to kill the eggs so that they wouldn't hatch. So could you imagine how many eggs you're talking about? How many hundreds of millions of eggs if every day everybody has to go and fill a pail full of pin-sized heads of pins, eggs, in order to get rid of them? So that's why you understand why the locusts are particularly worrisome and a sign that we better start doing tshuva right away. Tanu Rabbanan, matrien ala hilanot b'shar shnei shavua. I'll say it's a brisa, but feel free to correct me, that you start the tshuva process, you sound the alarm for trees during the 6 years, the other years of the Shavua. Shavua doesn't mean week here, it means the Shviit cycle, the Shemitah cycle. So during years 1 to 6 of the Shemitah cycle, if there's something wrong with the trees, there's not enough rain, so then you have the system of the hatra'av, sounding the warning. Al haborot va'al hashichin va'al ha'me'arot afilu b'shvi'it. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, af al ha'ilanot b'shvi'it, mipnei sheyesh bahem parnasa la'aniim. So in other words, the Tanakhama says you don't sound the alarm for trees during Shemitah, because during Shemitah anyway you can't work the land. It's a little easier if we look at, and then the Gemara brings Tanya Idach, another brisa, which is slightly different. So here, let's look at them side by side. The first brisa says, "Matri'in ala ilanot b'shar shnei shavua." On the 6 years of the Shemitah cycle, you sound the alarm for the trees. But during Shemitah, you wouldn't, because anyway the trees are hefker, they're not your business, and you can't work them, you can't do the malachot that are involved with the trees, so you have to leave it alone. The two brightiot agree on that. Al barot val shichin val ma'arot afilu b'shvi'it. But if there's not enough rain in the reservoirs, so then you sound the alarm even on Shemitah, because that's got nothing to do with Shemitah. Right? The need for drinking water is equal on Shemitah, and the collection of drinking water doesn't involve any of the malachot that are prohibited on Shemitah. In the first braita we read, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel omer, afal ha'ilanot b'shvi'it. He disagrees with the Tanakhama and says that even during Shemitah, you can daven for the trees, you can do tshuva for the rain to get enough tree rain. Why? Mipnei sheyesh bahem parnasa la'aniim. Because it's needed by the poor people. What happens to all the produce that's out there in the field during Shemitah? It's hefker. And the poor people who are in need of it can come and take whatever they want. So we should be doing tshuva and fasting and whatever if the crops are not good enough during the Shemitah, because it's necessary to keep the aniim alive. The second version of the Braita is slightly different. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel still agrees.
What? I mean, they wouldn't eat, let's say, svichin, right? But why couldn't they eat from the trees? Why couldn't regular people eat? Why wouldn't regular people
eat? You can't eat from the trees. In other words,
regular people also eat the sustenance from the trees?
You can eat from the trees, but it's not necessarily an indication of your parnosa, right? In other words,
because if they weren't eating svichin, what were they eating? If they were, I know they're only getting stuff from the trees. I mean, what else was there left to eat? They couldn't eat svichin, so what else was there to eat?
No, well, because there were all types of other things that were either things that were left over or things that were kedushat shviit that were not yet svichin, right? Things that were from shishit. Right, all the svichin do not only.
There was significant amount.
What? I don't know. I guess.
in those times.
Right? You couldn't live only on fruit.
Everything goes in the ground.
You couldn't live only on fruit. Right? Fruit.
Of course, I mean, there's the Gemara that talks about how they, you know, the Romans would make fun of us because they thought we were just eating like, you know, thistles and things because of the trees they could eat from at least. Now, you know, it seems like everyone would benefit from
that. Right. So anyway, but the point is that, in other words, yeah, everybody would eat from the trees, the poor and the poor and the wealthy, but if there's not enough rain, so then okay, you don't have to start doing this whole fasting thing, because it's not your trees, it's in your backyard, it's in your field, but it's not your tree. Right. So in the second braisa, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel still disagrees with the Tanakhama and says, "En achinami, we still fast for the trees even during Shemitah." And then he adds a halacha, "Matri'in ala svichin b'shvit." And if there's not enough rain for the svichin to grow, for the wild vegetables that come up on their own, what's called the aftergrowth. You know, this happens. The first year that we lived in the house, it was Shemitah. Meaning we moved in the summer. It was exactly 21 years ago. We moved in the summer, and Shemitah began that Rosh Hashanah. So during that summer, we did whatever we could to kind of get the gardens. You know, we came to the house. We were the first residents. The backyard was just dirt. Right? There was not a single thing there except, you know, weeds. So we planted grass, so we got those trees into the ground. But then during Shemitah, we had a tomato plant growing in the backyard. One of the kids had been eating something in the backyard. I guess my wife had made him a nice healthy lunch. They took the tomato and threw it away, and a tomato plant grew in the garden. That's svichin. That's aftergrowth. It's the kind of vegetables that grow up on their own, which Chazal made asur. Chazal said the vegetables that grow on their own during the Shemitah are forbidden, because they knew that since these things grow on their own anyway, they don't necessarily have to be planted. Tricky people will plant during Shemitah and then say, I didn't do any malacha. Right? It's just the tomato grew here, so I'm going to eat it. But the Isur of Svichin was not at all times and in all places. And the poor were allowed to eat the Svichin in the absence of other things to eat. So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, even Svichin, which is usur for most people to eat, it's not like the tree. The fruit on the tree, everybody, not only are you allowed to eat it, the Ramban says it's a mitzvah to eat it. But the svichin, you can't eat it unless you're among these impoverished. So the impoverished, since if there's not enough rain for those svichin, so then you can do the tshuva, you can sound the alarm for the svichin, because somebody has to eat it, and that is the poor. Okay, we're going to pause here, and we'll continue, I hope, next week. I assume we'll have shiur during Chanukah. Maybe we'll send around a questionnaire to see if people are planning on being around then. And then we will figure out the schedule going forward. Okay.
Thank you,
Laila Tov.
Cool. Thank you very much.